I like to start off by saying that Christmas is my all-time favorite holiday. However, every year, I remember what happened to my family on Christmas of 2019. I was 12 years old at the time. That year we went to my cousin's house to celebrate Christmas. It was a very fun night, and we enjoyed each other's company. We decided to stay at my cousin's house for the night, and leave early the next day. We settled down in the guest bedroom and soon fell asleep. Suddenly I woke up at 4 a.m., hearing noises coming from downstairs. Against my better judgment, I decided to go check it out. As quietly as I could, I crept down the stairs and looked through the wooden railings into the living room. I saw a figure that appeared to be dressed as Santa, looking under the Christmas tree. I went back upstairs and woke up my dad. "Hey Dad, Santa came back. He's downstairs." After my dad became fully awake, he seemed alarmed by what I said. We went downstairs to find no one inside the house. My dad told me that I might have just had a bad dream, and we went back to bed. The next morning, when everyone woke up and was getting ready to eat breakfast, my uncle went down to the basement to grab some drinks. When he noticed that one of the basement windows was completely shattered. After the initial shock, my dad and uncle checked the whole house to see if anything was missing or damaged. After they were done searching, they rejoined us in the kitchen. But before they could say anything, a loud crash came from the one place that wasn't checked: the attic. My dad and uncle immediately ran upstairs to check it out. A shouting match followed. We all ran outside and the police were called. When the cops arrived, the officers quickly ran inside the house. A short time later, they brought a man dressed as Santa outside. We later found out that the man had a large knife on him. The officer stated that it wasn't just my cousin's house that was broken into. There were multiple reports of break-ins up and down the block. Before I end this story, there was something that I overheard the cops saying that might be entirely unrelated to this break-in. But apparently they had been dealing with attempted kidnappings of young children at the local mall, with perpetrators dressed as Santa. This story happened in 2016. At the time, I was living on my own in an apartment with my dog, finishing up college. That Christmas, my dad was only 350 miles or so away from me, two states away, as opposed to being over 2,000 miles away in my home state. So my mom flew in, and I drove in with my dog, so we could spend Christmas together. The trip there in the first week was great. It was my first time living away from home, so it was nice to be with my parents again. However, the day before Christmas Eve, my mom found out that my dad was having an affair. And that kind of threw a wrench into things, needless to say. They fought all day into Christmas Eve. I got fed up quick, but I had driven there, so all I had to do was go in my car and drive back home. My parents were upset when they saw me repacking my car. It was now 7 a.m. on Christmas Eve, but I didn't really care. I'd rather spend my Christmas on the road than be in the middle of this drama. There was a lot of snow, but the weather had slowed down for the past few days, so I knew that the roads would be clear, and my car had four-wheel drive. So I set off, and spent the first hour of my road trip just angrily venting everything to my dog. I filled up my car before I left, because I knew that the drive from my dad's apartment to my college town would be exactly one tank of gas. So whenever I needed to refill again, it would be in a familiar area. About 2 hours in, I wanted to give my dog a bathroom break to avoid any accidents in my car. That's when I pulled in to a deserted rest stop to do just that. I hooked him up to his harness and made sure that I had my keys, phone, and my flashlight. I was cleaning up after him when I realized that he was doing these low rumbling noises, the sound that dogs make when they see something. And he began kicking up snow with his hind legs. Now is probably a good time to inform you that I don't have a big scary dog. He's a barely 10-pound Yorkie. The Christmas sweater that my mom made for him didn't exactly help him look more intimidating. He may not be a guard dog, but he is a good motion sensor alarm. I looked up to see what he had been barking at, expecting it to be an animal, but it wasn't. There was a distinctly human figure in the distance. Had my dog not alerted me, I would have never noticed. There were not any other cars in this parking lot, and this place was fairly isolated. It was unnerving. I scooped up my dog and went back to my car. Normally when I picked him up, my dog would stop barking at whatever he sees, but that was not the case this time around. He kept squirming in my arms so he could look behind me, and was getting more and more worked up until he was almost clawing at me. When we got to my car, I finally looked back again, and this time, the figure was much closer, because he was full-on sprinting right at my car. I panicked and threw my dog into the passenger seat. I quickly got in and locked my doors. But of course, my car would not start. I had never had this problem before, but the engine was not wanting to turn over. My dog was now in the back seat scratching at the windows and was going insane, barking and growling. The man reached my car. He resembled any other homeless man I had ever seen, with layers of slightly torn jackets, some dirty jeans, with shaggy hair and a beard. He went from his sprint to a slow jog once he got into the parking lot. When he approached my car, he slammed his hands against the driver window.
"I need a ride."
He sounded out of breath, but very monotone.
Sorry, no. I'm about to call a tow truck though. If you need a ride, you can get one from him."
I knew that I looked and sounded scared, and the man started pounding on my window again with both fists. He said something about being cold and needing a ride into the city, and that it was Christmas Eve. But at this point, I had stopped paying attention to him and was just focusing on trying to get my dog to calm down. He was still losing his mind in the back seat, still barking, growling, and scratching at the window. My dog has never before or since acted this way towards anybody. While he's not very fond of strangers or new people, he's always been the type to basically ignore strangers or any of their attempts to get his attention. So for him to be going crazy like this was a massive red flag for me. I held onto his harness to get him to relax, and I told the man that if he was cold, he could wait in the restroom for the tow truck to arrive. He motioned for me to roll down my window, and I shook my head no. I finally just put my hands over my dog's mouth, shushing him, and told the man that I couldn't help him. He looked angry, and then tried to open my door. Thankfully, it wouldn't budge, but it made my dog squirm out of my hands and went full-on ballistic again. I pulled out my phone to dial 911, and the second he realized what I was doing, he stepped back from my car and rushed into the bathrooms. Him leaving made my dog instantly lay down and relax. I explained to the dispatch what was going on. The lady was very nice, and she sent a police officer to the rest stop and agreed to stay on the phone with me until he arrived. The man came out of the restrooms and back towards my car. I began to panic again, but when he came close enough, I assumed that he could still hear me on the phone with the dispatch, and that made him run off in the direction he had originally come from. It took 15 minutes for the officer to find me. When we talked, we agreed that it was super expensive to get a tow truck out here on Christmas Eve, so I ended up deciding to call my parents to tell them that my car had broken down. My dad had a big pickup truck and was able to borrow a trailer from his coworker. The officer allowed my dog to sit in his cruiser to warm up while he looked around and followed the man's footprints for a while, but ultimately the man had vanished. My parents arrived around 2 hours later, and the officer helped my dad load the car up onto the trailer. I didn't plan on telling my parents anything more than my car had just broken down, but the officer filled them in about what happened anyway. Both of my parents then felt awful about everything, and they decided not to fight anymore, or at least in front of me. My dad was able to fix my car, but I think the entire situation really scared both him and my mom, because they ended up trading my car in for a new one the day after Christmas. They told me to consider it a late Christmas gift and an early graduation present. and my mom insisted on driving home with me when the holidays were over, and flying out of my city instead. I never received any updates from the police if they ever saw or heard from that man again. Hopefully he's learned his lesson about harassing people at rest stops.
On Christmas Eve in 1989, I was traveling through Mexico City in my boyfriend's car. He was driving and I was navigating. There were Christmas decorations up along the streets and most of the traffic was moving at a snail's pace, taking care not to hit the dense pockets of people walking up and down the street. We were in a hurry though, so my boyfriend turned off one of the main roads and we cut down a side street to avoid the congestion. We made a few more turns and suddenly stopped when we realized we didn't have a clue where we were. I opened the map while my boyfriend put the car in park and lit up a cigarette. I was tracing our route on the map to backtrack us when something struck our car hard on the front side right next to me. I caught a glimpse of a figure slam into our windshield and bounce forward off the car. I cried out in shock while my boyfriend stuffed his cigarette in the ashtray and stepped out of the car. This is where the experience became strange. I've never shared this before with anyone other than my closest friends and family who I trust. While my boyfriend was climbing out of the car, I saw the figure who struck us stand up awkwardly, holding his head and limp across the street. My boyfriend completely ignored him and bent down to look at the front of the car. I rolled down my window and called out, "Hey!" to the man as he limped away. My boyfriend, thinking I was yelling at him, called back to me. "Don't get out!" I called back, "What? Why?" And my boyfriend stood back up and I noticed blood on his pants from where he had knelt down. "He's dead," my boyfriend said and he rubbed his face. "What? No, no he's not, he's..." I turned and started to point in the direction the man had limped away in, but he was gone. I got out of the car and stood up. I saw enough to understand what my boyfriend meant. The man we had struck had flipped off the windshield and caught his head in a storm drain. His neck was very clearly broken and he was bleeding heavily from two different compound fractures in his legs where he had struck our car with his bike. The bike itself was lying on its side by my feet, the front wheel bent sideways and the back wheel still spinning. I was in shock and kept jerking my head back and forth down the street the man had limped down on and the figure at my feet. It didn't make sense, they were wearing the exact same clothes. "How many people did we hit?" I asked my boyfriend. He looked at me like I had hit my head. "Only one," he replied. Then he started waving his arms to flag down a police car. I sat down on the sidewalk and stared at the ground, feeling like I was going to be sick. I wasn't crazy. I hadn't seen a ghost because I had seen the shadow of the man cast on the stone wall behind him as he stood up and limped away. But there he was. The exact same man who had stood up right there on the ground in front of our car. The police blocked off the area, examined the bike and our cracked windshield and determined the guy had been speeding down the hill on his bike and struck us without applying the brakes. They asked me what I saw and the best that I could do was stammer that it happened so fast, I thought we had hit two people. We got a ride from a family member to my boyfriend's house but I was still in such a state of shock that I couldn't even touch the dinner that had been prepared for us. People have since asked if the man who stood up was bloody or if I could see the whites of his eyes. Honestly, I don't recall seeing either. All I could say with certainty is that he stood up, held his right hand to his head and limped away. He didn't react to my boyfriend stepping out of the car. I don't know if I believe in ghosts or life after death, but if that's the case, this man was physically reacting to the impact that had killed him, seeming not to have noticed that he was dead. Occasionally I dream about that night and that impact, but in the dream I never see the man stand back up. I see a bright flash of light and then nothing. No details of the man himself after the hit. I never even found out the man's name. It was the worst Christmas of my life.
My goal in writing this out isn't to have it shrugged off as just another entertaining online horror story. I sincerely want to know if this experience or anything similar has happened to anyone else. That may help me sleep better at night, knowing that it's not all just in my head. I'll admit that I suffer from PTSD,
but this is so much different from anything else that I've ever experienced during one of my episodes. Last Christmas, my friends and I had planned to meet at our hunting cabin and have a rustic holiday detached from the rest of the world. We were planning on just lighting a fire, having some drinks, listening to some music, and playing some cards. I arrived at the cabin first, just as the sun was starting to set. The cabin was set alone on the top of a rocky slope overlooking the highway, so I turned on all the lights so it could be seen from the road. I got the fire going and threw the beer into the icebox to chill. It had snowed the night before, so after I warmed up the cabin, I went outside and shoveled some openings by the driveway for the cars to park in. The entire time I was outside, I had that feeling that I wasn't alone. Not necessarily that I was being watched, but that someone else was on the property. I shook it off as paranoia. Unless they were here for the cabin, there was no reason to be this far up the hill. There was nothing else around except for trees and power lines. I went back inside and noticed a couple of missed calls on my cell phone. My friends had called me to tell me that they were on their way and that they would be there within the hour. I got the food going in the oven and brought in some more firewood. I had been sitting down for about half a minute, putting my feet up when I heard knocking at the window. It was a harsh rapping, clearly someone that was trying to get my attention. I paused and looked up. The noise hadn't come from the window around front. It came from the back window near the kitchen sink. It was the exact opposite direction that someone should be approaching from. That side of the cabin faced the woods. I stood up slowly and walked over to the window and peered out, half expecting to see one of my friends pranking me, but there was no one at the window. I peered out across the small area behind the cabin, and I couldn't see any movement. I walked over to the back door and opened it, shining a flashlight out into the misty gloom, and by the trees, I noticed an outline of a figure. I called out, "Hey!" and took four steps out into the snow when I stopped. The crunching of the snow beneath my feet was as loud as fireworks, and I glanced down at the tracks I made leading away from the front door. Then I slowly turned the flashlight beam over to the spot beneath the kitchen window. There was no tracks at all. For about 10 seconds, I just stood there, looking back and forth between the trees and the window. I then turned around and marched back inside, slamming the door behind me. I set the flashlight down, furious with myself, convinced I was having another episode, sensing danger where there was none, being distracted by stray shadows and sounds. I sat back down in the chair by the fire as another rapping sound came from the front door. I heaved a sigh of relief, presuming that some of my friends had arrived. I stood up and opened the door. There was nothing. None of my friends were at the door. No cars parked in the yard. No footprints in the snow. I felt a cold sensation sink into the pit of my stomach that had nothing to do with the weather. Someone was out there, taunting me. Distracting me, maybe, keeping my attention away from the other side of the house. I was suddenly convinced that someone was trying to break in. I grabbed my sidearm from my bag and picked up the flashlight again, and I searched both bedrooms, the bathroom, and the small closet where the water heater was kept, clearing any place where anyone could be hiding, making sure all the windows were locked. As I moved back into the living room, I glanced out the side window and saw the shadow of an adult man, maybe 5'7", cast itself across the front lawn by the glow of the porch light. I had him now. I flung open the front door and pointed my weapon. But again, there was nothing. No figure, not a whisper of movement, and no footprints in the snow. I held my ground. I wasn't crazy. That hadn't been the shadow of a tree. It had been a person. Head, neck, shoulders, and torso. I knew it had been. I scanned the yard with my flashlight, going over every inch. No footprints except for my own. The back door then slammed behind me. It didn't shutter. It didn't swing shut. It slammed. I spun around and nearly fired off a shot. I then sprinted to the back door, flung it open, and aimed, only to be greeted by the single set of footprints I had made before. I shut both doors and locked them. Shut off all the lights until the place was only illuminated by the fire. I put my gun in the filing cabinet, locked it, then dropped the key in a jar. I sat there by the firelight for another 25 minutes,
listening to pounding noises from various windows from across the cabin, forcing myself to ignore them and remain calm. I didn't catch a glimpse of any other shadows from outside, but I wasn't really looking. I saw the headlights of my friend's car pull in. I stood up, turned all the lights back on, and greeted them at the door, as if nothing was wrong. For the rest of the night, I drank with my friends, and kept a smile on my face, not giving any indication that anything was wrong. We decorated a mini tree, and played cards and had fun. That night, I slept on the couch, and ignored the sound of footsteps walking across the roof. Now, I would have dismissed all of this as just being in my head, and I wouldn't have taken the time to write it down and share it with you if it wasn't for what happened the next morning. I was making coffee, and my buddy came back inside after having a morning cigarette. His wife calls out to him from the bedroom and asked him if he saw anything. I asked what they were talking about, and he replied, "We heard the sounds of footsteps on the roof last night, but there were no footprints up there through the snow."
The best story my grandfather ever told me happened back when he was 18 years old on Christmas Eve in 1959. He was lying on his couch with a broken leg, which was perched on the arm of the couch all wrapped up in a cast. He was listening to the radio and watching the snow fall outside as he used the poker to adjust the wood in the fire. It was about 8 p.m. and he was alone in the house. His family lived on a farm in the middle of nowhere in Kansas, and his father and brothers were across the property in the barn, roughly about a mile away. He doesn't recall where his mother was. He was reading something in the newspaper about President Eisenhower when there came a furious pounding at the door. An enraged voice screamed from the other side of the door that Owen, my great-grandfather, was going to die tonight. My grandfather didn't respond to this. Unable to move off the couch, he pulled the rug across the room until the shotgun which had been leaning against the fireplace was in reach, and he picked it up and cocked it, pointing it towards the front door. My grandfather says for the next 5 to 10 minutes, the man continued screaming, circling the house and pounding on windows, screaming for Owen to come out. He was clearly drunk and out of his mind and wasn't leaving the house until someone opened up. My grandfather winced as the man banged on the window right above the couch, but he still didn't move or acknowledge him. Finally, the man returned to the front door and pounded on it until he kicked it in. My grandfather said that he felt the blast of cold air and the stench of tobacco and whiskey as the man stomped through the dark hallway and walked right into the living room. He was a tall, lanky guy with brown teeth and an uneven gray beard, like he had only shaved part of his face. The guy's eyes were as big as hubcaps and he was barefoot, which was crazy as it was snowing outside. For about 10 seconds, the guy didn't even notice my grandfather, but was glancing around the room quickly, his eyes darting back and forth like a rat until his eyes fell upon the couch. He saw my grandfather, he saw the shotgun, and he froze like a deer in the headlights. My grandfather cocked the hammer back on one of the barrels. He had him dead to rights and the intruder knew it. My grandfather snapped. The man took a step back, looking more enraged than afraid. "Where's Owen?" he hissed.
"Get out!"
my grandfather yelled. The guy turned around, walked into the kitchen, and dug through the pantry until he found a pint of whiskey. He even turned around and looked back into the living room just to make sure the shotgun was still up. He threw back the whiskey, dropped the bottle in the sink, and walked out, calling back over his shoulder,
"Tell Owen I said Merry Christmas."
Once the guy was outside, my grandfather heard him knock over the pile of firewood by the steps. After another minute, he smelled smoke and realized the guy had set fire to the pile, likely intending to burn the house down. My grandfather hobbled over awkwardly, shotgun still up, barely able to hold it straight on his bad leg, and peered outside. The guy was gone, but there was so much snow around the fire and so much icy wind assaulting it that the fire was already nearly out. When Owen and the others got back and saw the charred marks on the front stairs, they asked what happened and my grandfather told them everything. Owen flew into a rage, took the shotgun, and followed the guy's tracks out across the fields with a lantern. He didn't come back until Christmas morning when the family was all gathered in the kitchen for breakfast. Owen tossed the gun down and hissed that the fucking thing hadn't even been loaded. When my grandfather asked if he got him, Owen nodded and responded,
"Oh yes."
And that was it. He never got my great-grandfather Owen to report exactly what happened or even know how he knew the man. My grandfather said that he never saw the stranger ever again. I asked him if he thought Owen had killed him and he responded, "I'm almost positive that he did." When I asked, "But how did he do it with no ammo in the gun?" My grandfather looked back at me and said, "There's dozens of ways to kill a man with your hands."
This didn't happen to me, but a close friend of mine. To avoid any confusion, I will write the story from his perspective. This happened several years ago when I was about 14. My family planned a weekend getaway to visit my uncle in Maine. We would stay in a cabin because my uncle's house was too small to accommodate everyone. We arrived at the cabin on a Thursday night and planned on staying until Sunday. It was Christmas Eve when we got there. I'll give you a brief layout of the cabin. It was a small, single-story ranch-style house with two bedrooms, a kitchen, a dining room, an outdoor balcony, and one bathroom. We unpacked our belongings and settled in for the night. The next morning, we headed to my uncle's house and spent the entire day there. We helped prepare a Christmas dinner and had a small fire going outside. After a long day of celebration, we drove back to the cabin, extremely exhausted. I got washed up and ready for bed. However, once I exited the bathroom, I felt a dreadful sensation come over me, an uneasiness in the pit of my stomach. It felt as though something was in the cabin with us. As a side note, I'll mention that I'm a firm believer in the paranormal. I cautiously made my way towards the dining room. When I entered, I looked towards the back of the room where the window was. The moonlight outside had bled into the room, casting a dim glow. When my eyes adjusted, I then saw a dark figure standing in the corner. A pair of red eyes stared into my soul with malicious intent. My next actions are inexplicable. I still have trouble understanding what happened to me when I go back to that night. But I calmly walked towards the bedroom and ignored whatever was hiding in the dining room. I still can't explain it. I should have been mortified, but it was almost like my brain went into autopilot. I eventually woke up at exactly 2:17 a.m. to the sound of heavy footsteps in the hallway. I could have passed it off as one of my parents grabbing a drink, but the footsteps were slow and deliberate, getting louder and louder as they approached my bedroom. My worst fears came true when I heard my bedroom door slowly creak open. I ducked under the covers, hoping that the thing would just leave. But my prayers fell on deaf ears as I felt something sit at the end of my bed. There then came a low, menacing growl. I quickly shot up like a firecracker had just gone off inside my pants. I caught a brief glimpse of a black silhouette with piercing red eyes sitting at the edge of my bed. I then bolted out of the door, screaming for my parents. After calming me down, they asked what the commotion was all about. I told them about the thing that I saw in my bedroom, but of course, there was nothing there now. I was baffled because I knew exactly what I saw. I'm not crazy. I know the difference between nightmares and reality. It's hard to explain the kind of fear you experience when you see something with your own two eyes that you know should not be there. My parents did the obligatory lecturing about having a nightmare and brushing off any possibility of a paranormal event. We continued our stay until Sunday and left for home. To this day, I have no idea what I saw in the cabin that night, and I will not be returning to find out.